You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
On 2-8, February 8th of 2024, for those who are listening on the 10th or Saturday, it is February 10th.
There you
right?
go.
See?
Yep.
Yeah.
Math.
Yeah.
It's all math.
It's
funny
how back that to works. Math here. Speaking of math, I've just turned on my HP12C so everyone can know that if you need a future value of a present amount, I'm here to help you.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Any math questions?
Any math? Well, I don't know about any math questions, just to make sure it doesn't include algebra, right? X, Y, Z, whatever. Well, it's great to have you here with us. It is Thursday morning, of course, 2-8, and please watch. Don't talk back at me. And today, joining us is Heidi Cartwright.
I'm very happy to be here today.
Excellent. See, my watch had gone into listening mode. I you know, these technologies here, I'd like it to tell me the time, but it tells me a bit too much.
Well, you've got one of those fancy computer watches,
fancy,
huh?
Fancy schmancy.
Jeez.
Bought it off our son. I'll pay a little bit for it.
I saw he was selling them on the corner.
Wow, he's looking for a job. Yeah, a part-time job, you know. Yeah. He works full-time for us and part-time on the street, yeah. Whatever.
Sideline
His
hustle.
Mother won't be happy about that. Not at all. By the way, before I forget, this is 2-8, of course. For all you gentlemen out there and or others who want to get something for your significant other next week, Wednesday, yeah. 2-14, February 14th. And for those people who say, well, you know, she or he said they don't want anything, don't listen.
No.
Do not listen.
Okay. No is yes.
Sounds like you have some personal experience, huh?
Well, I do, unfortunately.
I do, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nothing is something.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is something. A card. Maybe a few flowers. Well, I don't have much in my budget for that. Who cares? Just, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Right? Thanks. You're all done now here with the show. I'm sure you appreciated it. And joining us, too, Deanne Jennings. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you. Good morning. What a beautiful morning it is this morning. Happy to be here with you all.
It is gorgeous. It's radical. Walking in, the nice breeze coming off of the, whatever, northeast. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. And I heard you and Colleen talking earlier. It's going to be an all-time high maybe today.
Yeah.
High.
Mid-50s.
Yeah.
Heidi saw Robin, right?
I did. On my way to the radio station this morning, hopping across someone's yard.
Wow.
And I'm like, the Robins are already here. This is
there
crazy.
There was a bear in the UP at a ranch that woke up out of its hibernation. And then it went back in. It took a look out and said, nah.
Nah.
It's still too
Never
early.
Mind. Yeah.
I need something to eat after all. You bet. So Heidi is our own retirement income certified professional, our managing director, and Deanne's our director of operations, speaking of titles. But they're going to be bringing tax information, Heidi, retirees, tax form retirees will want to know about. And Deanne, some great stats regarding the markets. And two, because we are in a presidential election year, investing in an election year, how to do that, your guide to investing in an election year today, how to survive the uncertainty and invest with confidence. Now, not all of us may have extreme confidence in any given time frame. And given the uncertainty that we're experiencing about who's next, whether it's Biden or Trump or someone else, mm-hmm. who knows, we'll see. But what's interesting in this, I think, are the stats related to it. Now, obviously, we cannot predict the future. That show's on 11, but, you know, we're not going to be here for that. So, yeah. Presidential elections can be divisive and unsettling. No kidding. At times, the fate of the world seems to hang in the balance. But when it comes to investing, do elections really matter that much? U.S. voters will have their say in November of 24, overreacting to short-term volatility during election cycles can be detrimental to investment returns. So I pulled up the Dow on February of 2020 as an example, and to just to see that crater that it did from about February 10th of 2020 to the end of March was really something to see, because that was the middle of the pandemic. The problem, or the opportunity, was that in April, immediately following, of course, March, the indexes had their biggest gain for 1 month in 30 years. Mm. So to try to guess when that's going to turn around, extremely difficult. 210 of 20 to 316 of 20 was the down, to be exact. So U.S. stocks have trended up regardless of whether Republican or Democrat won the White House, going back from 1923. Okay. Now, not everybody wants to hear that. I'm going a long time back here. But obviously we know that stocks have gone up. And what I wrote here was that companies have endured in spite of politicians and government. That was my own input related to that. So a $1,000 investment in the S&P 500, 500 stocks, as tracked by McGraw-Hill, a great index of 10 to be leading companies in that index. When FDR became president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in 1933 would have been worth over how much in 2023? Any wild guesses? $1,000 then to what amount by the end of last year? About a month and a week ago or so.
$400,000.
Oh, my goodness.
You're a little off.
Higher. Add a...
a lot.
Add a comma, okay, and three zeros and multiply.
$1.9 million.
Well, you said 400,000. I'm saying 4 million, okay, times about,
wow,
6.5 or so, $21 million.
Four
times about five. $21 million.
You put $1,000 in and you park it there and it turns into $21 million.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Isn't that amazing? 90 years later.
90 years, yeah.
Yeah. So $1,000 was very different then. That was a lot of money. A lot. I don't know that you could buy a car in those days for that. But anyway, it was a fair amount. Let's see, equivalent to maybe 50 grand a day, speaking of cars. So primary season tends to be volatile, but markets have bounced back strongly afterward. So as you know, we're in the middle of primary season right now. Dennis, you said you'd never talk about politics on the program. Well, I lied. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's interesting to talk about what's happening here in terms of how do we respond? How do we really take a look at this? You may want to check your exposure, but keeping in mind having some exposure to the markets, honestly, my own complete, unabashed opinion is this. Declining interest rates, I think, are going to be jet fuel to this economy when they do start to decline. Now, even though Fed's Powell is saying no, 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 he's going to have to say yes, yes, yes at some point. Now, as to the timing of it, who knows? You said right now it's not going to happen in March, but obviously everyone, including the markets, are waiting with bated breath.
So he's waiting, what, to make sure that inflation's under control?
Supposedly.
Okay.
Yes. Primary seasons tends to be volatile. Markets have bounced back strongly afterwards. So stocks have returned 11.3% in the 12 months following primaries. Well, can we just say 11% to keep it simple so we can keep that in mind? However, compared to 5.7%, we'll just round to 6, in similar periods of non-election years. Wow. So staying invested could actually be a good thing. And or especially adding money like you might in a 401k or otherwise through the primary season. Okay. Investors often get nervous and move into cash during election years. Now, is Dennis only trying to sharpen his own axe here? Might be a thought. And I get that. You know, he's Mr. Rose-colored glasses, if you will. Well, I do live, eat, and breathe this stuff. And I do get that the markets go down. They do. But overall, it's an amazing thing to watch. Staying out of the political realm, how these companies have continued to sharpen their own axes, if you will, and gotten sharper and had better earnings over time. The competition is fierce. Fierce. Talking to a gentleman who's in the automobile industry yesterday, and the way, that the bidding goes on in terms of pricing pressure that they get for their products, it is just as tight as it gets, I think. So, you know, these people who are in these industries and in these businesses have to create. That's why Apple has created this vision thing. You know, I'm not even willing to take a gander at what that is. But you know what I'm saying. They have to develop new products or they're going to become obsolete as companies over time. So they're trying to solve the equation of what will the public want next. And it's not an easy one. Hmm. Net asset flows into money market funds have been more than twice as high in election years as in the year after an election. So flows into money market funds relatively safe or to relative safety have been twice as great. So to the extent that you cannot engage in that type of behavior, whatever it is, you know, too much excess to any degree is not a good thing.
Are you saying with that stat that people are taking their money out of the markets and putting them in money markets during an election season?
Correct, money market funds, yeah, to relative safety, which the yields there might be in the range of 4 to 5% to safety, you know? To safety. Hmm. I want to stand on the beach while the waves come in, you know? Mm-hmm. But staying on the sidelines has rarely paid off. It's time. I'm circling that in my own mind. I did underline it here just so you can see here, Ron.
I see there's an underline under that. I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, thank you. It's time, not timing, that matters most. Time.
Time, not timing.
Not timing. So being patient through these things. It's like the gentleman who says to his wife, "Yes, dear," instead of losing his patience. "Yes, dear." Okay?
Yes, dear.
Dennis, he's so philosophical here this morning. The S&P 500 index had negative returns in only two of the last 20 election years, 2000 and 2008, and both declines were largely attributed to asset price bubbles rather than politics. Well, someone disagree with that, and I totally get it. But there were asset price bubbles in 2000. The internet.
That was the dot-com bubble.
Okay, that's
but
right.
2000 was who was running against
that was
whom?
The Gore and Bush.
Gore v. Bush. Oh, yeah. My gosh, yeah. That was tight.
Then 2008 it was tight. Obama.
Yeah.
First term.
Obama. Which political party has been better for investors? Any answers? I don't see any phone calls coming up here. Any text?
Yes.
Which political party has been better for investors? So we do have a text. Is that right? Is that
couple,
what you're
yeah.
saying? Really?
I'll guess Republicans.
Yeah. Investing during election year can be tough on the nerves, and 2024 promises to be no different. Indeed, politics can elicit strong emotions and biases. Is it biases or biases? I'm not sure. B-I-A-S-E-S. But investors should be wise to tune out the noise and focus on the long term, because elections have, historically speaking, made essentially no difference when it comes to long-term investment returns. Long-term, okay? And that's where I wrote the note. Companies have endured in spite of politicians and government. It's called freedom / capitalism. Mm-hmm. Dennis weighs in, okay? So, obviously, the environment that a politician creates in terms of their own view of things and helping businesses, I am not. Please do not let you think, if you will, that I'm saying it doesn't make a difference. It makes a huge difference to the ability of them to continue to compete on a worldwide stage today. That's what we want to engender, if you will, amongst our companies. But over time, it's not made any marked difference. I'm sure this time may be different, you may be saying. I get that, but over time, not made that significant a difference.
Speaking of that, one of your texts says, couple days ago I read that one share of Walmart purchased in 1975, one share today is worth $87,000. Walmart is pending a 3-for-1 split soon.
Talk about a story, huh? And Walmart was a total unknown when it became public in 73. But it is an incredible story. The same could be said for Berkshire Hathaway, BRKB, yeah. If you want to buy the shares. They're a bit cheaper than the others, BRKB.
But as you said earlier, they're looking for what's next or what do people want.
Yes.
Walmart had the answer in their case.
They did. Yeah. They did in several respects. And now they're looking at the Internet for delivery. Mm. And they are being watched and purchased by many value-orientated investors. Heads up. So what typically happens to the stock market during election years? Patient investors who stay the course, 11.3 in the 12 months following versus 5.7 after. Keep in mind, these are just averages. Investors shouldn't try to time an entry point into the market. Now, the difference in real amounts, 10,000. I thought this was particularly helpful, and we're going to skip through the rest of it. 10,000 average ending value. This is the S&P 500. Average ending value after a four-year holding period, if you'd ran through the whole thing, if you will, 10,000 would have grown to about 15,800. If you'd timed it and stayed on the sidelines until January 1st, after the election results, would have been worth 14,800. So about $1,000 less
than just staying fully invested.
Fully invested with a $10,000 investment. Mm-hmm. So to put a point to it, try to not let the politics of the day affect your investment decisions too much. Reacting to or trying to buy a specific asset because a particular party is in power often can be a fool's errand, if you will. So don't bet on politics making that much of an influence or difference in the markets over time. But keep in mind, diversification generally is still the best strategy. Don't bet on the politician of the day changing your investing life that much. And that may be difficult to hear. I get it. But that's what the numbers would say.
There are members of Congress who have done very well on some stocks.
Yeah.
It's as if they had some kind of
inside information. And for that legislation that would keep them from investing in those companies, I would hail that as an excellent thing to do. Stop it already.
Such a good point. Like, basically, you're saying it could be very beneficial to stay the course.
Yeah. Always review, but take a look at the companies that you own through the mutual funds and or your allocations. Yes. Great advice, Deanne.
Text for the Prout team. When people talk about the stock market, why isn't it ever adjusted for inflation if it's stated as a record high? Is it really? So they're saying if the market hit a value of X and compared to 1920, that's a huge record high. Is it all adjusted for inflation?
It's not adjusted for inflation. That's a flat rate of return. But when you're looking at your returns, that's a great point. You should always adjust your returns for inflation. So if CDs are at 5% right now and inflation's at 3, your net rate of return after inflation is 2. In the stock market, if it's 8%, let's say, obviously then your rate of return is 5. So stocks have a history of outperforming inflation. That's for sure. But good point. Okay. Inflation should always be entered into the equation.
Also, a caller would like to know if land / property is still a great investment.
Well, that's a great question. If prices are going up, it's a good investment. Even if they're not, you can use leverage, especially if it's responsible, to improve your rate of return. I've always liked real estate. I mean, I get it. Mm. I grew up on a farm in the mid-Michigan area. So it was always about, you know, how can we get more land?
And that's a longer-term investment, real
estate.
It is, yeah. Transactions take longer.
Right.
It's just
yeah. The true appreciation you're going to see from land and or housing is a lot dependent on location, timing. At time, your time invested, and other factors. Williamsburg is a great example of what has happened with the horse shows out there. Land around that area has exploded in value and will probably only continue to grow. That's an easy one for me to pick on. But it's just amazing what's happened out there in that area. So some of it depends on location.
I read Walmart, part of their strategy is they would, when they started to expand, they would go to a rural area. They would go outside mm-hmm. and, you know, open land that didn't had a low value. They would build there. They'd buy a lot of acreage. And because all the people now drive into Walmart, they were able to sell that acreage at a higher price to other stores that wanted to be there.
Probably recoup most of their original investment as well.
Yeah.
Given they sold it or liquidated. You bet. Yeah. So there are all kinds of things or things you can do. Now, let's talk about, before we go to break, the Lunch and Learn.
Yes. Speaking of real estate, we have a Lunch and Learn coming up February 21st. It's the Wednesday from 12 to 1. It's called Downsizing for Upscale Living with Holly Hack. And she is a realtor with Exit Realty. And she is going to be there and present. And you can ask questions. It will be a great opportunity if you're thinking about real estate.
That class is filling up.
Yes, I think
we've got 17 filled there. And I think we got 24 spaces. So we do have a little bit of space there. Mm-hmm. Downsizing for Upscale Living, that's February 21st. Social Security with Bob Simpson.
We have one left.
One left there. And I reviewed his, thank you, Bob. I reviewed his his outline. Hmm. Phenomenal information.
You gave him an A plus?
I did.
He's always such a good presenter.
He won't be
disappointed. He's fantastic.
Yes, that's right. March 20th. All these classes are from 12 to noon. And they have been so well received. Thank you to our listening audience for coming on out. Well, we just got through retirement planning today, filled that class as well. It was just, it's fun to use it for a dream that we had 2 or 3 years ago. So thank you.
Somebody had a question. Is a fixed annuity index good to invest in an election year? Since it follows the stock market, is there any stat on a good month to invest in a point-to-point index fixed annuity?
Well, that's interesting. That's an annuity question. The regulators really don't want us answering that so because there are so many variables that go into that. It can be if you invest your point-to-point, and it is higher at the end of that. It depends on their participation rate and what, if any, caps you have on that particular index. So it can be. The nice thing about those products is the fixed indexed annuities guarantee your principal against loss by the insurance company itself. It's guaranteeing you against loss if the market should go the other way. Mm. That's why they can be an interesting, I'll just say, investment for those who want to avoid the risk. So, Heidi, 10 tax forms retirees receive and what they mean. What do they mean and what are they?
Yeah, this is an article I found through Kiplinger, and I thought it was pretty interesting because, you know, right now we're all getting in the mail, we're getting all these tax forms that says tax document enclosed herein. And so what are all these forms and what do they mean? And one reason you want to know this information is so that you know if you're missing something. Should you be receiving something for a certain account or asset that needs to be reported on your tax forms? So let's jump in. The first one is the 1098 form. These are some of the very first ones that arrive in the mail with the new year. This documents deductible interest. Most commonly, most people, that would be for your mortgage. And something to remember for people who have mortgages, if you refinanced during the year, you should get two of these, one from each company that you were financed with during the course of the year.
Would you be able to deduct the refinance cost?
It just says on here that that is where the interest is reported, and if you're allowed to deduct that interest, that's where you'd find the information.
That would be if you itemize.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, so if you're itemizing, which means that your deductions are over, what, for $23,000, $28,000, $29,000?
Something like that.
$1,000. Yeah. It's a big number. And Heidi, of course, is looking it up because I asked
her. She has the sheet. She's handing it to Dennis as we speak.
Yes. Always ready.
Standard deduction mirroring joint. This is 24.
Yes.
$29,200 for this year. 29 oh, grand. Not bad. Married filing joint. Okay.
So you lop that off of your gross income, right?
Yeah, you're able to take that off gross income to arrive at something close to your taxable income, depending on any other deductions or credits.
Of course, all of these, whether they're usable or not, it all depends on if you qualify to deduct that interest and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the 1099 NEC. You've probably heard people asking people, are you an employee or an independent contractor if you've gone in to have your taxes done? So independent contractors receive the 1099 NEC for their work. If you do consulting engagements, for example, and you earn more than $600 in any calendar year, you would receive one of these 1099 NEC documents. And then one that we're more familiar with at our office is the 1099-R, because the 1099-R captures all sorts of distributions from retirement accounts. So maybe RMDs, or if you did a Roth conversion, that could be another reason why you would receive this. Now, an exception to the is the direct rollover. If you have a direct rollover, that distribution would not be taxable. It's reportable, but it is not taxable. So you would look for box 7 to show you a code G, and that would indicate that the transaction is non-taxable.
That sounds like the phone call with President Carter just now.
Yeah, right.
So, nice and clear, right?
Dan Aykroyd on SNL. So that really does mean something. So when you get that 1099, you know, you had a $300,000 rollover. All of a sudden, you get a 1099. Oh, my gosh. $300,000. I got a 1099. Well, if box 7 is checked properly, if you will, that means it's not taxable. So you want to confirm that these forms are filled out properly. Oh, great. You mean really? Yeah, because if you take that to your accountant and he or she just enters in the number, of course, you're going to owe a lot more in tax. But you want to be aware of these things. It can be really helpful to you to call your advisor, if you will, and tell them, I did a rollover, but this is box 7 isn't checked. Well, you'll save yourself a lot of hassle because then they can have that 1099 reissued.
Correct. You want to get that reissued so you have the proper documentation. Mm-hmm. But like your RMD, that amount that would be on there, that would be taxable income.
Unless why?
Unless they did a QCD.
You rolled with it. She's Good job.
But there is no box on the form to indicate you did a QCD, so you have to tell your tax preparer. And we just sent out our letters to all our clients who did QCDs last year to remind them so they could hand that piece of paper to their tax preparer and not miss that benefit.
It's got a big red flag on it. You did a QCD. Here are the organizations you gave to and the amounts. Okay. Make certain that you give that to your accountant or bookkeeper, if you will. Okay?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. So then another form many retirees get is the SSA 1099. So if you're collecting Social Security benefits, well, the bad news is some of those are taxable. Now, Social Security benefits for most people are 85% taxable. If you're lower income, it may be less, but most people are in that 85% taxable part. So let's have an example. So say you received $30,000 in Social Security benefits. That amount goes on line 6A of your tax return, which is on the form 1040. And then on line B, you enter $25,500, which would be 85% of your benefits. And line 6B is what you actually pay taxes on. So you're not paying it on the full $30,000, you're paying it on 85% of that amount.
Now, this is based on whatever your income tax bracket is. Because,
correct.
Again, as you mentioned, Heidi, not all individuals will have to pay 85% of their Social Security benefits will have to pay based on 85% of their benefits, okay?
Yep. Everybody's favorite answer, it depends. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about the form 1099 INT. So that form is what tells you how much interest income from banks or brokerage accounts that you received. This includes CDs. So if you earned more than $10 in a calendar year, then you should receive this document. And just as an aside, interest rates are up. So if you don't receive one and you have a nice balance in a savings account, you might want to go and check with the bank if there is a money market or a CD where you can earn a higher rate.
So if you earn $10.01, you have to pay tax on that?
It's reportable.
It's reportable, okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you have to pay tax if it's $9.99?
No.
You won't get a 1099 INT.
Right.
It's funny, last night I read this article, and then I had time, and I'm like, I'm going to put my tax information all together for my accountant, and I went through my 1099s, and I'm like, oh, there's an INT.
There you go. You've got one. All right, then there's a 1099 DIV. So this reports dividends paid inside of taxable accounts, individual joint accounts, trust accounts. IRAs would not have this form, okay?
Hang on a second. Whether or not these dividends are reinvested, they are taxable in the year received. Now, that's a confusing thing for a lot of folks. Well, I've reinvested my dividends. Are they still taxable? The answer is
yes.
Absolute. So
they
even though
always
you
want their part.
All right. But that's if it's a taxable account. You own an account yourself or with a spouse outside of an IRA. Okay.
All right. 1099B, this document transactions are in any given year. So these transactions get consolidated into a Schedule D. So this documents the transactions that you did.
Sales and buys. Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then we have 1099 miscellaneous, or MISC. So this is a catch-all. This catches less than it used to, but it used to. It's used to include income that is now reported on the 1099 NEC. Now it is used to report rents, prizes. So if you won the lottery, awards, non-employee compensation. So it's really just like it says, it's miscellaneous, all these other sources of income you might have received. Now there is what is called a composite 1099. So this could include your 1099 INT, the DIV, the B, and the MISC, or the miscellaneous one. So it has like different chapters within this consolidated statement. So you may get that composite. So just, you know, if you don't see that you have all of these individual ones, maybe it's combined in a composite.
Is it composite? Very good.
And then the last one we have is the K-1. This is income passed through to those who hold interests in businesses. These are sort of a problem for people because they are the very last one that comes, and it comes very late. Like Dennis, we were saying, like usually after March or at the mm-hmm. end of March. So if you have a business partnership or you have an ownership in some kind of asset, it could be reported on this K-1. They're often called alternative investments. So you want to make sure you're looking for this stuff. And just from our office, February 8th, today, is when our custodians were giving us as the mail date for some of these forms. So if you haven't gotten them yet, you know, they still could be coming in the mail.
In the next week or two. Mm-hmm. The only form that they're missing here is the K-9 form. Rhonda, what's going on with that?
Woof.
There you go. Thank you. Next, Deanne, is stats and some interesting ones indeed regarding the markets.
Yeah, I'll start with a stat about the 2024 election year. According to the Anchor Change Election Cycle Tracker and additional research from Statista, 2024 is seeing national elections in more than 60 countries worldwide. Around 2 billion voters, approximately a quarter of the world's population, are expected to be heading to the polls this year. 2024 has been dubbed a super election year, or even the biggest election year in history, aided by closely watched elections in populous countries like United States, Mexico, India, and Indonesia. And that source is Statista. Heidi, you had a funny comment when we were talking about this.
Oh, I think they said this last time we had
four years ago.
Yeah, but it's still, I'm sure there's more people now than mm-hmm. there even were then. So it's moving in a upward direction.
Absolutely. As of January 24th, the sensational six stocks of Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, Nvidia, and Meta Platforms had a combined market cap of $12 trillion.
Wow. Big numbers, huh?
Huge. Yeah.
$12
trillion. They make an impact.
Do they ever.
They do. Since 1990, the S&P 500's average performance in February has been a decline of 0.04%, with positive returns 58% of the time. The only other months that have averaged declines are June, August, and September, and that source is Bespoke. Big month for Michigan. In the same month that it won college football national championship for the first time in 26 years, the University of Michigan reported that the preliminary January sentiment reading in its survey of consumers rose to the highest level since July 2021. It was also the largest two-month increase since December 1992, and that source is University of Michigan.
That interesting? Mm-hmm. The confidence level. Rising quite dramatically. And a part of that is the stock market.
Stocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
U.S. equity markets fell sharply Wednesday, January 31st. Fed Chair Jerome Powell noted that a March rate cut is unlikely. The S&P 1500 fell 1.7% for its biggest Fed day drop since March 22nd, 2023. Ironically, even with declines outnumbering advancers by more than 10 to 1, the best performing stock in the index that day was Powell Industries, which surged 45% in reaction to earnings, and that source is Bespoke.
I'm sure they're not named after Fed Powell.
No.
So,
yeah.
No. And I looked that up, actually. It's Electronics and Innovative Technologies.
Ah, okay.
That makes sense. Tech's doing well.
They had a good year.
Yeah. Paul has nothing to do with it. Used car prices fell 1% in January, according to automobile auction company Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index. While Manheim's index shows used car prices falling 21% from their all-time high in December 2021, data from CarGurus.com shows that the value of a used Tesla has dropped 49% from a high of around $68,000 in July 2022 to about $35,000. And that's Manheim.
Ron.
Yes.
Now's the time to buy a Tesla. You've been waiting, right?
I would be very nervous about buying a used electric car.
Mm. Me too.
Yeah,
a lot of people are.
How often do you have to get the batteries changed in those electric vehicles?
Well, it costs a lot. I don't know how often. Probably once in its lifetime, I would guess, but it's really expensive.
Yeah. Very expensive, and who knows whether or not it would even charge. That's a problem that they've had, I guess, in Chicago when it got that cold. They wouldn't, the batteries wouldn't accept a charge. You got to somehow warm it up.
Not good for Michigan weather.
Not good.
And the last stat, there's been lots of talk lately about inflation, whether it's our bread, milk, gas, but one thing hasn't been affected by inflation. Last year's Super Bowl had the highest share rating since Super Bowl X in 1976, and the average 30-second ad cost $7 million.
Hello.
30-second spots of this year's Super Bowl between the Kansas City Chiefs and San Francisco 49ers are set to remain at the same $7 million mark as last year, which is just the 11th time in 57 years that prices haven't increased relative to the prior year. And that source is SuperBowlAds.com.
What a deal.
What a great time to do ads. Taylor Swift is going to be there along with all of her fans. So, you know, that's what a great deal.
Little $7 million.
Yeah.
All right, that'll wrap it up today. New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. You can hear a replay Saturdays at 9.
You bet.
You can call Prout Financial Design for any questions at 947-3992. All right, Dennis, Heidi, and Deanne, thank you all.